Chapter 15. The exonerations of Ron Williamson and Dennis Fritz brought national attention to Ada. By daybreak on April 15th, the courthouse was surrounded by news vans, satellite trucks, photographers, cameramen, and reporters. The townsfolk drifted over, curious at the commotion and anxious to see more. So much jockeying had gone on for seats in the courtroom that Judge Landreth was forced to improvise a lottery system for the reporters and a one-line live feed out of his office window for the news trucks. A collection of cameras was waiting outside the jail, and when the two defendants emerged, they were surrounded. Ron was wearing a coat and tie, dress shirt, and slacks that Annette had hurriedly bought for him, and he had new shoes that were too small and killing his feet. Dennis's mother had brought him a suit, but he preferred the street clothes he'd been allowed to wear during his last years in prison. They quickly made their final walk in handcuffs, smiling and bantering with the reporters. Annette and Renee arrived early and took their usual seats, front row behind the defense table. They held hands and prayed, cried, and managed a laugh or two. It was too early to celebrate. They were joined by their children, other relatives, and some friends. Wanda and Elizabeth Fritz sat nearby, also holding hands and whispering excitedly. The courtroom filled up. The Carter family sat across the aisle, once more dragged into court to suffer through another hearing as the state floundered in its efforts to solve their crime and find justice. 17 years after Debbie's murder and her first two accused and convicted killers, were about to walk. The seats were soon filled, and the crowd began stacking up along the walls. Judge Landreth had agreed to allow cameras, and he herded the photographers and reporters into the jury box, where folding chairs were brought in and wedged against each other. Cops and deputies were everywhere. Security was tight. There had been anonymous phone calls and threats against Ron and Dennis. The courtroom was packed, and tension was high. Lots of cops were present, though Dennis Smith and Gary Rogers were somewhere else. The lawyers arrived. Mark, Sarah, and Barry Scheck for the defendants, Bill Peterson, Nancy Hsu, and Chris Ross for the state. There were smiles and handshakes. The state was joining in the motion to dismiss, to set the boys free. This was a joint effort to right a wrong, a rare example of the community coming together at a crucial hour to properly address an injustice. One big, happy family. Everyone should be congratulated and take pride in the system that was working so beautifully. Ron and Dennis were brought in, and their handcuffs were removed for the last time. They sat behind their lawyers, a few feet away from their families. Ron stared straight ahead and saw little. Dennis, though, looked at the crowd and saw glum, hard faces. Most of those present did not seem too happy with the prospect of their release. Judge Landreth assumed the bench, welcomed everyone, and quickly got down to business. He asked Peterson to call his first witness. Mary Long, now the head of the DNA unit at the OSBI, took the stand and began with an overview of the testing process. She talked about the different labs that had been used to analyze the hair and semen from the crime scene and the samples from the suspects. Ron and Dennis began to sweat. They had thought the hearing would take only a few minutes, time enough for Judge Landreth to dismiss the charges and send them home. As the minutes crept by, they began to worry. Ron began to fidget and grumble, "What's going on?" Sarah Bunnell scribbled notes to assure him things were fine. Dennis was a nervous wreck. Where was the testimony leading? Could there be another surprise? Every trip to that courtroom had been a nightmare. Sitting in it now evoked harrowing memories of lying witnesses and stone-faced jurors and Peterson demanding the death penalty. Dennis made the mistake of again glancing around the courtroom, and again did not see many supporters. Mary Long turned to the important material. 17 hairs taken from the crime scene were tested, 13 pubic, 4 scalp. 10 of the hairs were found on the bed or in the bedding. 2 came from the torn panties, 3 from the washcloth in the victim's mouth, and 2 from under her body. Only 4 of the 17 could be matched with a DNA profile. 2 belonged to Debbie, and none came from Ron or Dennis. 0. Long then testified that the semen samples taken from the bedding, the torn panties, and the victim had been tested earlier, and of course, Ron and Dennis had been excluded. She was then excused from the witness stand.